It's time for Journeys with Rebecca here on BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on BBS Radio. Welcome. Are you ready to take a journey with me into knowledge, enlightenment, and discovery? Then let's journey again together. This is your host, Rebecca Jernigan, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Hello again. Welcome to another Journeys with Rebecca. My guest today is Marshall Masters. Now, he's returning to continue our discussion on the Colburn Bible, Surviving the Next Catastrophe. You are not going to want to miss this. And, of course, later in the show, I have this huge, huge announcement. So if you're into ghosts, you will definitely want to listen to the interview with Dr. Larry Muntz, parapsychologist. But first, a thanks to all my sponsors, including Your Never-Ending Life, Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series by Sandy Andrews. The theory of universal learning focuses on developing an understanding of the transcendent scale of the universe and learning the ways of God the Creator. Now you can find out more at universallearningseries.com. And also a special thanks to Fate Magazine, and certainly you can find out more about them or to subscribe at fatemag.com. Okay, check out the website, journeyswithrebecca.com. Now there you're going to find all the latest Journeys news, including more about my big announcement. Can't tell you yet, a little bit later in the show. Now, also on the website, you're going to find guest information, links, and the upcoming show schedule. Again, that's journeyswithrebecca.com. Now, Marshall Masters, a former CNN science feature news producer, freelance writer, television analyst, and the publisher of Yowza.com. That's www.youwusa. And of course, Dr. Larry Muntz, parapsychologist. Stay tuned and we will be right back. Derek Acora fans around the world are acting fast to add the hottest DVD to their collection, Derek Acora Raw, The Lost Hollywood Tapes. Over 2 hours of never-before-released footage showcasing Derek Acora in action during psychic field testing in Hollywood. Derek Acora Raw is uncensored, the stuff you'll never see on television. Some material may not be suited for younger viewers. Don't wait. Order Derek Acora Raw, The Lost Hollywood Tapes, now at journeyswithrebecca.com.
Get your personal and private reading from Rebecca. To schedule an appointment, call 1-888-95-TAROT. That's 1-888-958-2768. Find out where your life's journey will take you.
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Okay, we're back, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca. We are here revisiting a friend of mine, Marshall Masters. Now, if you all remember, Marshall was on just a little bit ago talking about some of his new works. One of them was the Colburn Bible. And today he's going to be back because we just simply ran out of time to share information last time he was with us. So let's welcome him back. Hi, Marshall.
Hi, Rebecca.
Oh, it's always great to talk to you.
Oh,
always
likewise.
Just fun stuff.
And absolutely.
Besides fun, we're actually today is going to be a little bit different because it is truly, truly an informative day here for you to be back. We're going to kind of pick up where you left off last time you were with us, because it was just not enough to talk about everything that really needed, the message that really needs to get out there. So I'm going to kind of turn it over to you, let you get started, and of course I'll interject in, you know, like I normally do.
Great.
All right.
Well, what we want to talk about today is actually how to survive the next global catastrophe. And the first thing I want to tell your audience is that everybody already has a plan A for how they're going to survive the next global catastrophe of one sort or another. What I'm talking about today with you, Rebecca, is Plan B. And this really all stems back to 2000, April of 2000 for me. I was visiting Israel, and we went to Masada down near the Dead Sea, and that's the fortress that was in around 74 years after the death of Jesus. The Jews had a rebellion, and a bunch of zealots went to the top of the mountain, and the Romans built this huge ramp with a bunch of slave labor, and when they got up to the top, everybody had committed suicide, so it was a hollow victory.
Wow.
And there were just a few women and some children that survived, and one historian. Well, I was just fascinated with this place. I walked everywhere you could walk, you know, and the water system was, with all these great cisterns and wells, was what really caught my attention more than anything else. And then finally I ended up with, I was standing on the wall directly atop the Roman ramp leading up to the side of the mountain, and there was this Israeli historian, young gal working on her master's degree and giving tours, and we had a little bit of casual conversation. Finally I got around to the question that was really in my mind. I said, so what was learned here? That it's noble to die for your beliefs? And she looked at me, smiled, and said, no. The lesson of Masada is that you always have to have a plan B. And
yeah,
that was a moment of epiphany for me. And after that, when I came back, I had been doing Your Own World USA as like a small personal page and languished with attention. After that, I decided, that's it. We got to start working on Plan B and kick it up, whatever Plan B eventually is going to be. And that took me through a lot of process of learning and really, you know, coming acquainted with catastrophe. And along the way, I learned some really incredible things. That first off, this generation of human beings is more capable of surviving a global catastrophe than any other past generation. All right? And as a computer technologist, I can make that claim, because what I see happening is that we are going away from being very structured list thinkers to object-oriented thinkers. Well, so let me break down that geekiness.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, object would... You know, as list thinkers, think of it, you go to the store, and we've got, you know, eggs, cheese, lettuce, you know, cereal, whatever, we got our list, and we race back and forth across the store, and we fill out our list. Now, we could get a book on how to optimize our time, which is just simply super list thinking, and the experts will say, well, you have to prioritize your list, which is another way of saying categorize it, so that you have everything grouped by departments in the store. You go, you have all your dairy here, and you have all your meat there, and you have all your produce there, and so forth. And that makes more efficient use of your time, but you're still thinking in terms of lists. And that means that with that kind of thinking, unless we can find the answer in a catalog or a table of contents or an alphabetical index, we're pretty much lost. However, we've started using the internet, search engines like Google, Yahoo, MSN. What this is doing is it's turned us into object-oriented thinkers like Madison Avenue MacGyvers. All right, remember MacGyver, that was it John Dean Anderson, long before he was starting to do Stargate. He was doing that wonderful show, MacGyver, and the guy just, you know, he could do anything in the world with a penknife, right?
Right.
And that's object-oriented thinking, where what's happening is that it's the need at the moment drives the context of all of the information that binds to that need. That's exactly what happens with the internet. You type in a question, for example, when did the world begin? And you will get a whole listing of web pages from a whole different viewpoint, many of them, They could say from this point of view, from that point of view, and you have all these objects of information, and then you are free to decide what context works for you out of all of this related information. And consequently, it trains your mind to look at information in a different way. You don't need someone to sit there and organize a list for you, as list thinkers do. You're like a Madison Avenue ad executive. You can think outside the box. You can pull this right out of your tuchus.
Well, there you go.
And that is an incredibly powerful survival skill. And this really trains us to be much more adaptable. And also to be able to better assess different things that are going on. Because survival experts will tell you, the people who are most likely to survive a catastrophic incident are not the ones that have got, you know, bags full of the latest gizmos and gadgets and the best that money can buy. It's the people who can quickly assess what's happening, formulate a plan, and then take action on that plan. It may or may not be, in the final analysis, the best plan. But at least if you can assess your situation, formulate a plan, and take action, your chances of surviving the event are significantly higher, because you're going to be surrounded by all these befuddled list thinkers who are going, is there a table of contents for this?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, that makes total sense. I mean, obviously, those who are on this planet right now have never really had to survive those types of catastrophes. I mean, there's been, you know, the Katrinas and the tsunamis and things of that nature, but not on a global aspect, so.
That's right. And so, you know, then it's saying, well, we haven't been there before. And do we want to have people who've never been there before, like us, tell us what to do? Or do we want to hear something from people who have survived major global catastrophes in the past? And we have to go back thousands of years to get catastrophes of this scale.
Right.
Well, the Colburn Bible does that. That's the reason why I really have embraced the book. First off, as a space threat researcher, the historical accounts are prescient and phenomenal in terms of researching, and at one level you could say that's just, well, it's arcane and esoteric. But what I love about the book is that these are secular historical accounts, and it's not history as it was written by the victors, nor is it a book inspired of God. All right, so there's no agendas. This is more like the 9/11 commission report we published years after 9/11, with all the looking inside and saying, gee, how did this happen to us? And we got to be honest about it. And that's really what the Colburn Bible is. And what we have in this book is a phenomenal amount of folklore and historical accounts according to the people who survived these past global catastrophes. That makes this information incredibly valuable. Now, how does that translate to us as individuals? How do we say, well, that's great, that's worth a lot. Well, how's it worth anything to me? Well, it's worth it to you in the exact same way that it helped natives in Sumatra survive the 2004 superquake and tsunami. If we go back to that, remember that unfortunate Christmas event, you had natives who are quote-unquote primitives, illiterates, and what are they doing?
Yeah.
Their folklore that they have been repeating and telling their children and passing on down, and that's what they talk about over the fire at night. Well, that folklore kicked in because they have been continually imprinting in their minds this folklore. And the folklore, what that process does is it gives them visualization. And that way they can more readily understand what is happening around them, because they've had to imagine it through visualization. And then you have literally what the survival experts will tell you is neural imprinting. That's what visualization does. So you go, Wow, yeah, I see that. I understand that because I've seen that before. And that's the big advantage. That's the reason why all these backwards, ignorant, primitive people were immediately running for the hills, screaming, feet don't fail me now. Okay.
Right.
And all of us educated, wealthy, civilized coastal dwellers were going, oh, good, let's go pick up the stranded fish.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. And so that is the power of visualization through folklore. The accounts in the Colburn Bible are so prescient. They're like man on the street interviews. You read them, you cannot help but visualize. So what happens then is that you connect, you remember, you survive. And that's the immediate power of it. It'll help prepare you for that. And while other people are going, gee, I need a table of contents to figure out what's happening to me, you're instinctively going to know what is happening, and you will instinctively sense where to find safety. And by the time they find their table of contents, you'll be long on your way to that place of safety. And so, really, if the people are looking, you know, trying to find their table of contents are smart, they'll stop doing that, and they'll look at you and go, you seem to know what you're doing. I'm going to follow you. So, you know, you
right.
may or may not have a crowd following you. Don't worry about it. Save yourself first. The rest of the world is on its own.
Right.
So that's that point that the Bible, Colburn Bible, is immensely helpful. Because it really is like, when you read it, it's like, as a former CNN science features producer, and I looked at it and I went, wow, these read like man on the street interviews. They're that incredibly sharp. There's none of this, you know, mythology of hoochie coochie shot the arrow into the sky stuff, right?
Now, right.
This is, hey, this is what happened. We saw this thing coming. It tore up the trees. The mountain started firing up. It's very direct in the language. And so you read it, and then you put the book down, and then you start seeing this stuff unfold in your head. And when you do that, you start that neural imprinting process that is going to help you find safety well ahead of the rest of the crowd when the guacamole does hit the fan. Then after that, the next stage where the book is helpful for you is actually getting through the event itself. We have, we tend to have a biblical sense of catastrophe. In other words, it all happens in the blink of an eye. No, that's not the way these things happen. I mean, as you look at Katrina, you look at that Sumatra superquake, these events, you could have an initial part of the event, but it's the days and weeks afterwards that can be just as disastrous, and the suffering just keeps on happening. So when you're going through all of this suffering, what you need is something that will renew your hope, your nobility, your sense of self. And the Colburn Bible gives you wonderful stories that will do it in what I call like a Shakespearean manner. A lot of people don't realize, but back during World War II is when more Londoners were reading Shakespeare and the classics than at any other time in the last century. The bombs were falling on them, and when bombs are falling on you and you're sitting there huddled in, you know, in a bunker or in a subway station, a dime store novel is just not going to cut it. You know, you need something that's going to talk to your soul.
Right.
And that's the reason why they read Shakespeare in the classics, because what makes a classic, is that it talks to the soul. And there are wonderful stories in the Colburn Bible that do exactly that, like the story of Yagol and Hermitar, which is a story about how we sacrifice for those whom we love and how much we're willing to sacrifice. So you have these stories so that while you're sitting there huddled over a fire made of what's left of the framing of your house, you know, and someone is sitting there going, I found a can of tuna fish. Oh, boy, we're eating good now. you know, in the firelight, you could sit there and read the story of Hermanitar and Yadol, and people will find comfort in that because, like a Shakespearean play, it'll touch their soul. And that's powerful.
Yes.
then afterwards, you wind up having another need altogether different, because governments, as we saw particularly with Katrina, you know, we could have all the great noble plans and yada yada we want, but in the final analysis, what got those people out of the Astrodome was Geraldo Rivera and other guys standing in front of it going, let our people go.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
And government, really, it was, you know, all the finger pointing was ridiculous. And so in those situations, we have to expect that we're going to need to fall back on creating small survival communities to get by, where people come together with a like-minded goal of working and living together. There was something the Cody Lundin, I did a lot of analysis of his stuff, and he wrote the book 98.6, and he made a pithy statement that I thought was brilliant. People who cannot live together die together.
Huh, interesting.
It is. And the point is that you have to be able to live together, and you're in a small community. And even a small community, you have to have a basic set of understandings so that people can, you know, you have some sort of normalcy. And the Colburn Bible there offers two of the 11 books in the Colburn Bible, and they're both rather lengthy, address that specific need. One book was written by the Egyptian authors, and another one was written by the Celtic authors. What I feel is really valuable about them is that they offer a neutral source of understandings that predate Christianity and Islam and other modern faiths. So, in essence, you could say these rules or understandings are so old, they're new.
Right.
And so it gives people a neutral territory to go look at what the Celtic and the Egyptian authors are saying. This is how a small community needs to be successful and to thrive in a survival situation, and then decide your own rules and understandings. But at least it gives you a neutral basis from which to work from.
Well, and I think that's probably the most important thing, is that the messages in there and the information is that it's neutral. It doesn't have a faith or a belief system or, you know, some other thing that would make people uncomfortable going, I don't want to adopt that. That's not how I really believe. Before all this happened, why would I do that now? So, and that's really what that comes down to, is just and as you stated earlier, when we were off before we come on, is that one comes from a different perspective than the other, and I think that's what makes it even more valuable, because there's good stuff in both of those, from the Celtic and the Egyptians. And Marshall,
yeah,
we're out of time on this one, so hold that thought and we'll be right back. Don't go away, you guys.
Your Never-Ending Life, Book 1 in the series, Universal Learning. It introduces the revolutionary philosophical theory of universal learning. The book is written in an easy-to-read and broad-minded fashion. Your Never-Ending Life explores subjects such as past lives, karma, emotional control, and superior spirit. It takes you on the journey to the discovery of you, the never-ending eternal spirit. You will develop an understanding of the transcendent scale of the universe and learning the ways of God the Creator. To learn more or to get your copy, visit www.universallearningseries.com. That's www.universallearningseries.com.
For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life and by others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on all aspects of the paranormal, angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now 1-800-728-2730 or visit the website at www.fatemag.com. Again, the number is 1-800-728-2730. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool block skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
All right. Welcome back to Journeys with Rebecca. We're here with Marshall Masters. We have been talking about the Colburn Bible and surviving the catastrophes. Now, I know that you have some other information kind of delving into a different aspect of all this, Marshall. So let me go ahead and let you get started with that.
Okay, yeah. One of the things I wanted to tell your audience is that we need to change terminology. We think of, I always say, well, talking about the next global catastrophe, because that's how people understand it. But we really need to rephrase it as surviving the next global evolutionary event.
True. I agree with that statement.
Because global catastrophes are nature's crucible of evolution. And it, you know, literally, you know, it culls the herd. Get rid of the old dead wood and make room for the new. This is a natural process. And if we understand it that way, as it's part of an ongoing process, then we don't have to sit here and keep thinking, well, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it. Because if that's what you think, then trust me, when the day comes you need to cross that bridge, you're not going to get across, because it's going to be three levels deep, packed with people who had the same idea.
Right.
Meanwhile, the folks that were saying, hey, you know, while there's time, I'm going to work on my plan B, they're going to be on the other shore on top of a mountain, nibbling their preserves and looking at you.
Right.
Trying to, you know, get over this horde of people that are going to cause the bridge to collapse. So, as an evolutionary event, you know, what does that really mean? Well, let's start with men and women, relationships between men and women. Because when I wrote God's Child Covenant back in 2002, and what I really wanted to do was create a fictional novel based on a realistic flyby scenario of Planet X Nibiru, which is one of those looming potentials out there for global catastrophe. And when I sat down to write the book, my personal goal as an author was to ask myself, assuming we're not completely eradicated by this event, that there's enough of us left to start fresh, what is the one thing that is going to be most valuable to our species to ensure its survivability in that situation? I wrote the whole book, which was rather substantial, and when I finished with it, you know, after I finished actually it was around the second pass on the manuscript, and that's when I had the answer. And as long as there's enough of us left to repopulate, we will survive as long as men and women can love and cherish each other for their differences as co-equals. And this is the most important thing. Relationships, the most important thing to our survival as a species is the relationship between men and women. If we have exploitation, subjugation, domination, that doesn't work. That sets us off in the wrong direction.
Immediately.
And it blinds us to what's happening around the world, because if we are not in a good harmonic balance between the sexes, and that puts us into a material exploitation, subjugation phase. Well, what that does is it really colors our entire view of the world around us. When we're in a service-to-self exploitation mode, we're like little 35-millimeter cameras. Our focal plane is pretty narrow. So let's say, for example, you set your 35-millimeter camera to focus at 5 feet. You know, think about it. Anything that's beyond that, out to infinity, starts looking pretty fuzzy, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. That is service to self material thinking that is based in exploitation and subjugation. And consequently, you can really only focus on what it is that you want to exploit. Anything that's beyond that is out in fuzzy land. And it has to do something pretty dramatic, pretty bold, for it to register in your mind, because it's actually fuzzy out there. And on the other hand, if you're living in a service to others mode, where there is, men and women are co-equals, there's compassion, there's love, there's all of the positive harmony that you need, then what happens is that you're not restricted like this 35-millimeter camera. Your focal plane is the entire universe around you. And things that are up close to you are just as much in focus as things that are at the edge of the horizon. And now what happens is that you are better able to see what's coming, any kind of dangers, because you have this harmony, which is basing in the most fundamental part of us as human beings, our relationship between men and women. So that is really important. Interestingly enough, in the Colburn Bible, it tells us that women, the ancients tell us that women are superior to men.
I already knew that.
Is that a trip? You know.
Well, yeah.
And I remember I had, on Cut to the Chase, I had a fellow by the name of Kellerman, who was a Mayan cosmologist. And he said, well, as we go to 2012, women are going to stay the same, but men are going to think more like women. And it's like, I'm going, oh, that's really going to play well with the guys. And it was short-sighted thinking, because the service to self model, and it really goes back to what the Colburn explains, why women are subjugated and dominated by men today, was that men by instinct, by nature, want to please women. And so they do put them on the pedestal. But that there comes a phenomenal amount of responsibility for women when they're there. They have to think about the species first. And so what happens is, when women go into service to self mode, you know, I have all of this, I'm empowered this way. Now there's that tendency to abuse power. You know, the old saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Correct.
And so the Colburn tells us that women fell from this position of authority, natural authority and natural power, because they abused it. And so the men, feeling betrayed, then did what men do, you know, exceedingly well, subjugate, you know, boom. And that has created a basic disharmony that has to be redressed. So it is something where, for both men and women, we have to live in service to each other. We have to place the survival of our species, of our clan, of our communities at the same level as our own. And that requires a lot of discipline. But that is something that I think we are evolving towards that. And I see a tremendous amount of hopeful signs, evolution. And one part of that really is the indigo children that are beginning to appear. And it is something that in my book, Indigo ET Connection, I talk about that. While experts who write about indigos, and these experts are not indigos themselves, all right, tell us that indigos are basically recent genetic freaks that have been around for 40 years. And for indigos, when they read these books, it's put yourself in the position of being a child living in the ghetto, and you have a stack of books on ghetto life that come dropping on your doorstep, written by rich white people in Oxford. You know?
Right.
It's like, sorry, it
doesn't
connect,
fit,
right?
Yeah.
And so, myself, I'm in, in 1980, I was accepted into Mensa, which is a high IQ society, and there's a double-edged sword there, having a high IQ, because that means you're immediately socially challenged, and that's a real tough thing. So you get in there and you really find just a lot of socially challenged people. and who don't have a strong sense of self. But you do find small numbers of people within groups like Mensa that have an indomitable sense of self. I always spotted these people since 1980. There were always just a few, a small percentage of the Mensa groups that I associated with. And then when the awareness of the Indigo children came out, where we look at the hallmarks, the identifying things, the Indigos, from a psychic standpoint, have a purplish aura. And I've had psychics tell me I have a purplish aura, but I can't see it myself, so to me it's not a valid criteria. I look at the behavior aspects, and that is you have a high IQ, a very powerful, indomitable sense of self. That's the reason why a lot of Indigo children are being pumped full of mind control drugs today, and their lives are being wrecked from it because people are trying to overpower their sense of self. The other thing is that Indigos are not largely material people. They are more, their primary thing is not getting rich, it's getting oneness with the universe.
Right.
Completely different shift. So for those of your mothers out there that are going, gee, I want my kid to be an Indigo, forget being a stage mom. Yeah, that ain't going to happen. And so with Indigo children, I see this as something that, you know, like I said, I've been noticing it for a long time in people who are certainly older than 40 years. Well, when I started writing Indigo ET Connection, I began interviewing people who are Indigos, and there are more of them showing up on the web in very small discussion groups. They don't like to be very visible because they're largely misunderstood. And so they'll have little groups on Yahoo groups and Topica and like that, and you go out and meet these folks and chit-chat. And I began interviewing several of them, and the process really did come to accept the fact that I too was an Indigo. And then I had to, well, what does that really mean? Am I a freak, or am I part of a natural process? And Indigos, what I feel, are that the gene for Indigo children is in our uncoded DNA, which is, you know, we say we know the human genome. Well, that's only about 3 or 4% of what we really know. The rest of it is called junk DNA by the geneticists because they don't understand it. You know, if we don't understand it, it's junk.
Right.
Geneticists that are a little more enlightened call it uncoded DNA because they have observed that uncoded DNA will modify the coded DNA we understand.
Right.
Well, I believe that the reason why we have the great numbers of Indigos that are showing up at present, largely two things. One is it's a huge statistical push. You have 6 billion people on the planet. So even if you have a fraction of 1% of these people, a tiny fraction of 1% of these people, with 6 billion, you still have large numbers.
Yes.
The second, and that makes them more noticeable. The second thing is that we have the internet, and people are connecting, you know, without having large media bureaucracies and propagandists deciding the information that we're going to get and how we connect with each other. We're able to connect directly. And so this human-to-human connection has helped further this awareness. So then that brings us to the question, what is causing, you know, what's the principal driving force for the Indigos? You know, is God up there, you know, going, okay, it's time for you kids to show up? And what I believe is that it's really related to solar activity. You know, according to Max Planck in Germany, the sun has been in a frenzy since 1940. According to the Swiss scientists, it's more active than it's ever been in the last 1,000 years. And what that means is that we have the sun outputting more energy. And that is going to cause us to modify genetically.
Absolutely. And, you know, here's the thing. We're almost out of time. Why don't you, the Colburn Bible, please give your web address so that people can get this and so they can actually write you or contact you before we run out of time, Marshall.
Sure. It's for the Colburn Bible. It's Colburn, K KOLBRIN.com. You can also, for all of the books I've been talking about, you can go to MarshallMasters.com or YourOwnWorldBooks.com. That would be YOWBOOKS.com.
Marshall, as always, it's been a pleasure, and I know we're going to have you back on again here real soon to complete the rest of this information. You guys don't go away. Journeys will be right back. Order your collector's edition DVD of Derek Acora Raw, featuring over 2 hours of uncensored, never-before-seen footage of Derek Acora putting his psychic abilities to the test inside Hollywood's most famous haunted locations like the Comedy Store, the Pink Palace, and the Vogue Theater. You'll never see Derek Acora, the world's most televised psychic medium, like this again. Derek Acora Raw, The Lost Hollywood Tapes. Order your collector's DVD now at JourneysWithRebecca.com. Do you want to understand more of the nature of the universe? Why is there billions of galaxies and trillions upon trillions of star systems in our known universe? Why do we sense we are eternal beings? Why do we have different personalities? Where do our emotions and dreams emanate from? Where do the visions of deja vu come from? Your Never-Ending Life, Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series, introduces the philosophical theory of universal learning. The theory of universal learning focuses on you, the never-ending, eternal spirit, developing an understanding of the transcendent scale of the universe and learning the ways of the Creator. Your Never-Ending Life explores such subjects as past lives, karma, emotional control, and superior spirit. For more on this book, visit universallearningseries.com. Your Never-Ending Life, Book 1 of the Universal Learning Series, is available at Barnes & Noble and Borders bookstores and online.
Get your personal and private reading from Rebecca. To schedule an appointment, call 1-888-95-TAROT. That's 1-888-958-2768. Find out where your life's journeys will take you.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Welcome back to Journeys, and as promised, I have a very special guest here this evening. Her name is Dana Smoller. Now, Dana Smoller is an investigator with the ISPR, and she's also oversees the Ghost Expedition. So, welcome to the show, Dana.
Thank you, Rebecca. That was very nicely done. I think I owe you, like, what, a couple dollars for that? That was very nice.
Aww.
Usually only my mom said nice things like that.
Aww. Well, you know, I kind of try to be nice.
I know you are. Well, thanks. I'm so excited to be on your show today. This is great.
Oh, this is fun. And, you know, you're just an absolutely fun person. You know, I know you a little bit, too. And that makes it kind of even better, you know, to be able to sit here and just chat with people. But, you know, you are quite an enigma. You have a lot of different things that you've done throughout your life. And today, you know, as people are kind of been waiting to hear about is, I'd like you maybe to talk a little bit about what is ISPR. And then also I'd like you to maybe go in and talk about what do you mean by overseeing ghost expeditions and truly what that is.
Okay.
So
okay.
Maybe we should just start that way.
Okay.
Cool.
Well, the ISPR stands for the International Society for Paranormal Research, which was founded in 1972 by parapsychologist Dr. Larry Muntz, who specializes in field parapsychology, which means paranormal research out in the field as opposed to the lab parapsychology, you know, hooking people up to different monitors and testing them with Zener cards, you know, for psychic abilities, stuff like that. And actually, it was Dr. Larry that came up with this brilliant idea while he was doing a six-year research study in New Orleans beginning in 1990. He thought, you know, how can I sustain this research? So he came up with the idea of ghost expeditions, which he was, you know, thinking about in 93, but actually implemented it in New Orleans in 1994. And then I came along in 1995, and I actually met Dr. Munz on a ghost expedition in early 1995, and it just kind of rocked my world. And the funny thing about it was, everybody in my group had all kinds of experiences at these properties, these GE sites, except for me. Go figure. Anyway, so I was so rude about it, and because a lot of people who know me will testify that I can be quite rude. and I was just like, why didn't I see anything? Why didn't I feel anything? And, you know, I was just a brat about it. Anyway, I was fascinated, and as time went on, I struck up contact with Dr. Larry while he was still in New Orleans, and I went back to my home state. And then things changed in my own life, where I was able to actually pick up and move and start working with him. So that's my story and how I got involved, really. And my first introduction to the ISPR was participating in ghost expeditions and then learning how to conduct them myself. And then I started participating in ISPR investigations. But you know what? I started out with a scientific apprenticeship, or at least I'd like to say that. And what that meant was, for me, is I got to hold the Polaroid one step, because actually any idiot could do that. And I continued on in these investigations. My own abilities started opening up and doing so in front of other people who could substantiate it. And then Dr. Larry looks at me one day and says, "Wow, you're like a little raw psychic tool." And I became an investigator.
Wow.
Yeah. But I started conducting ghost expeditions in New Orleans, and I did it several times every day. So actually, it kind of translated into what I think is like about 4,000 hours in the field inside haunted properties, collecting all kinds of data, scientific data and psychic data. And it was amazing, just absolutely amazing. But it was so amazing to watch people participate. And then at the end of it, they're like, "Oh my God, this just really rocked my world, and I've got so many more questions than I did when I came in." And it was wild.
So just so that everyone out there is clear, when you're talking about ISPR, you're talking about paranormal investigations, which may or may not include haunted properties. Ghost expeditions are truly just verified haunted properties, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
That's correct. The ISPR investigations, most of them refer to paranormal occurrences in the field, but of course we also work on different criminal and legal cases as well, as you well know.
Yes.
And then the ghost expeditions were designed to collect research on a continuous basis, so that there would be a better barometer to look at variables and constants in the field, you know, with respect to a haunted property, and also to start looking at the psychic abilities of a wide range of people who had no access to these properties, you know, ahead of time.
Prior to that, no prior knowledge or access, right.
Yeah,
so it's verifiable.
It's so cool.
Oh, absolutely excellent. Well, now, obviously, if you were doing ghost expeditions down in New Orleans, I'm sure that's probably changed since the devastation of Katrina.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, we had closed down the operation of New Orleans or ghost expeditions in New Orleans in 1997 when we opened it up in Hollywood. And the Hollywood ghost expeditions were great. They were conducted at the Vogue Theater on Hollywood Boulevard, and that place was extremely active, and that was truly amazing as well. And then in 2004, we decided to take it back to New Orleans. There was a big demand for it, people contacting us from the city and also tourists. And so we reopened, and it was going like gangbusters from week one. Just rocking and rolling all year. It was great. And then, unfortunately, Hurricane Katrina came in, wiped everything out. And, you know, we right after the hurricane, we decided to do trips, weekend trips with Dr. Larry in New Orleans, and as we set it up, we ended up changing course. It was just, the devastation was just too wide, and dealing with entities We didn't think it was a good thing to do at the time.
Right.
So we have changed direction, and we found a most amazing property in Los Angeles, and we are reopening Ghost Expeditions this fall.
Yay!
Yay! And I'm very excited because for the first 6 weeks, I will be conducting the Ghost Expeditions, and I haven't done it myself in a few years. So it's going to be wild. That's very trippy. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, all right. So somebody wants to go to a ghost expedition out there in Los Angeles. I know you've got all the information, but what is it that they can expect? What's going to happen with them? I know it's a three-hour excursion kind of a thing.
Yes. They're three-hour events, absolutely. And without giving too much away, they get to come into a property that is not accessible to the general public. In fact, the property that we're going to be using, I know, dates back to 1882.
Woo!
Yeah, so we're talking many, many layers of history. We've already done some initial investigations into the property. We know it's active, but we are not going to do complete investigations prior to the ghost expeditions. We want to use all these participants first and then conduct a formal investigation. But the ghost expeditions will be used as part of the research. So people will get to come in, they'll get to use some handheld instrumentation. They'll be instrumental in collecting scientific data, which is primarily atmospheric fluctuations at times of rest and times of paranormal activity. And then they're going to also get to participate in various psychic enhancing exercises.
Wow, excellent.
While doing that inside a haunted property. So
wow.
It's very wild.
Well, tell everyone, we've only got about a minute left, so tell everyone how they can get there, what they can do to get, you know, wow.
Okay. To purchase Ghost Expedition tickets, first, please call the ISPR office. We have very, very limited availability. We'd hate for people to purchase the tickets online and then have them refunded. You know, sorry, you can't go. So they call the ISPR at 323-644-8866. If you lose a number, you can find it at ISPR.net or ghostexpeditions.com. And call the office for set your date, how many people, and then you can go to Journeys with Rebecca.
Yay.com
and buy the tickets online.
Absolutely. Oh, Dana, thank you so much. You guys, if you have any questions, you can always mailbag at journeyswithrebecca.com. Dana, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Rebecca.
You
guys, hang on. I'll be right back. For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life and others just like you who have something dynamic, significant, and truthful to say. Fate brings you the latest on all the aspects of the paranormal. So to receive your free Fate magazine, call now, 1-800-728-2730. Again, that number is 1-800-728-2730. Or visit their website, www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate awaits. Hi, this is Rebecca. You know, it's easy to keep up with all the latest Journeys news. My upcoming guest, just sign up to receive the Journeys newsletter. It's free, and you will never receive any junk mail. Your email is never sold or distributed. So keep up to date the easy way. Just log on to my website, journeyswithrebecca.com, and at the bottom of the main page, you'll see the box. Type in your email address, and you're done. And once a week or so, you'll receive all the latest Journeys news.
Get your personal and private reading from Rebecca. To schedule an appointment, call 1-888-95-TAROT. That's 1-888-958-2768. Find out where your life's journey will take you.
Journeys is always looking for informed, entertaining, and passionate guests. Email your guest suggestion to mailbag at journeyswithrebecca.com. I'd like to thank my guests tonight for sharing their wonderful information and knowledge with us. And a special thanks goes out to you, the listeners. Now, you know, the guests I have on air are given the opportunity to share their viewpoints or ideas. Now, you and I have the opportunity of choice in regards to those ideas or viewpoints. Be sure to check in next week for more enlightening, educational talk and discoveries.
This is Rebecca of Journeys with Rebecca. Until we meet again, where will your life's journey take you? Many blessings and good night.